we have shown there's two. There's one is baseline and the other one is targeted. Now, financing, let's just go on baseline because that's the targeted is the stretch, how we really ourselves beyond that. The financing advances, Chair, that's the money. Once we've approved the funding, let's say if we approve a project this year, particularly large projects, not all of the money will be dispersed in the exactly the same year. There's sometimes an overlap. That is why, Chair, if you were to look at these numbers, you would see that they won't necessarily add up to 200 billion because of the overlap, but that's actual cash. So we would approve to say, okay, we approve this project. For an example, let me give you an example of the green projects. This is renewables. So we approve the project, and then we have to start construction, buying the equipment, implementing. So some of it happens sometimes 18 months, sometimes it's 24 months, so it depends on the time. The smaller ones will happen in the same year, but the large ones will do it. So that is why when you look at financing advances, there'll be a bit of a lag. So now, what we're doing here, we're actually showing, we want you to demonstrate how the funds are actually going to be flowing, because when the funds flow, that's when we know actually the economic activity happens. So these are the finances that will be advancing over the 5 years, 2016, 17, and 14, and all of that. And then, but also what we will be needing to do, Chair, just to remind the committee, as we said, how do we fund ourselves? We go out into the market, we borrow, and then we need to be repaying some of that. So the borrowings repaid, so the borrowing repaid, that will be the loans that we would have raised. So some of them will be repaid. Because the loans that we repay is a combination. As I said, some of them we get them from the development finance institution. Some of them we issue bonds, and then they have to be repaid. So those are the borrowings that we'll be repaying over that period. I will come down to the funds raised, because some of it we will be going out into the market and raising some funds. And then we have what we call dividend paid, Chair. We have, with the approval of the Minister of Economic Development, agreed that IEDC, in terms of our plans, will continue to pay dividends. Although the dividend is very modest in the scheme, I mean, because the shareholder has said you should be reinvesting more into the economy. So that's why we've kept it at 50 million per annum in terms of the agreement that we've had with the shareholder, because the shareholder wants us to see more money into the economy. I know other entities don't pay dividends, but we thought it's also just good measure, so that you also an indication to the shareholder that we are indeed sustainable. And then the last one is we would have some assets and liabilities, which is very modest in the scheme of things. In terms of the funds coming in, because this would have been funds that have been going out. In terms of funds coming in, the repayments received, so those would have been when we've advanced funds and then people repay, and then the IEDC, then we're receiving some of this from those loans that we've had, because we need that money to put back into the economy. And then the net income before tax, as David said when he was preparing that, during this period, even at the targeted level, we are demonstrating that IEDC will be sustainable. So we will increase our level of investment, but we will continue to be sustainable. So this is showing, this is the profit that will be coming in before tax. But how does that profit get, I mean, how do we derive that? That comes from the interest that we have charged on the loans that we would be getting, that will be coming from the dividends that some of the investments that we have, for an example of investment in Sasol, we'll be declaring dividends and Kumba and all of those, and then left all the expenses that we would have then been able to receive, then that's the profit before tax that we'll be getting. And then during this period, we'll be seeing, Chair, that we will be paying tax. That's why we're issuing tax, because as an IEDC, in fact, we're one of the very few DFIs that pays both a dividend and tax. I know, for an example, NEF doesn't pay tax. DBSA doesn't pay tax. I think that's one thing, Chair. At an appropriate time, once we've engaged with our our shareholder, I think it's something that we'll bring back to the committee. Because the issue is then, instead of paying tax, why can't you take this money and put it back into investment and all that? But I think at the appropriate time we'll come, Chair. I don't want us to preempt this, because we still have to make sure that our shareholder is fine. And then, okay, that's the tax paid. And then the internal funds generated, that would have been from some of the investments that we would have sold over the period, because some of the investments would have been matured. For example, we might be having a share in this, and then we'd have to liquidate some of that to be able to invest back into the economy. And then the funds raised, those would have been the borrowings. So we'll go out into the market and raise funds and borrow so that we can be able to invest. What we've always tried to do, change whenever particularly we raise funds, also for good risk management processes, is that when we go out and we borrow, we should take that money and unlend it, so that we don't have an issue where sometimes you go out and borrow and you go and you buy or you invest in equity, because there's always a mismatch. So you suddenly, for example, you go to a bank, you borrow 100, but you go, you take that money and then you invest it and buy shares in it, because we feel that that's a bit dangerous, because the shares are long term in the nature and you can't match them, so we don't do this. So that's why you will look at our borrowings, the funds raised and the financing advances. You'll see that in all that whole period we try and ensure that the funds we raise are less than the funds that we advance, so that mismatch doesn't happen. Otherwise you have an issue in terms of now suddenly you have to repay, but you don't have the money that you've received from the client, so that you try and balance it. So this change is showing that during this 5-year period, one, we will continue to be sustainable in terms of profit, but we think our balance sheet will still be relatively strong enough for us to be able to keep the promise of investing over 100 billion rands over the next 5 years. And that even with the assumption of us continuing to pay tax, we would like to believe that we'll be able to fulfill our mandate as far as the development is concerned. So all of these numbers, Chair, are firstly supporting what we want to do in terms of the plan, but also in line with the capital allocation that we have shown in slide 48. David, do you want to add anything? And then maybe David then can look at the key performance indicators. So how these numbers fit in the pandemic? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. KPIs, I think I like the fact that you also allocated KPI, which to us is a benefit, to be honest, because we don't have money get there. And this will give us a clear indication, and we will be able then to come back to you and ask a further question. I think even those questions might be asked when you present your first quarter, depending on where you put your KPI. Thank you very much, Babuklina. Are there any questions from members? Yes, Mr. Atkinson, Mr. Tim Murray, and then Mayor Nathalie.
Thank you, Chair. The baseline figures, I would assume, is what you aim to achieve at the very least. And your targets, I would assume, would be your stretch targets, what you're aiming for. What I found interesting was just that your net income, your baseline in 2019 and 2020 is actually higher than your targets. One would assume that your targets should always be higher than your baseline. If you look at net income before tax, in 2019 is 2807 and the target is 2692, so your target is actually less than your baseline. And likewise in 2020, your net income before tax, your baseline is 3492, which is less than the 3253, so your target is actually less than what you should be achieving, so I'm not sure what creates an anomaly. Thank you.
Jeff. I'm going to receive. Just two questions quickly. From the funds raised, I know we have touched on the borrowings. Is part of that through bonds as well, that you raise through bonds, or is it just loans that you do? And then secondly, if you can one make the assumption that basically that net income tax, well, we see here before tax, but obviously looking at after tax, your dividends is basically, or the, you know, if you do subtract the dividends, and that is the portion that you reinvest basically from your earnings. I know this is not an income statement, so this is a cash flow. So it is different, but just to gather from here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. I partly covered. Mr. Kuna, please forgive my little knowledge in the team. I wanted to understand that you borrow what you have borrowed. What is the interest rate? You borrow money and you borrow to companies. What is the interest rate and what is the impact? And the second one is that one, all the dividend paid. Like I said, forgive my little knowledge. This 50-50, what is this 50-50, the dividend? Thank you.
Thank you. The reason why the baseline profit, particularly in the latter years, is more than the targeted one, which the targeted one is a stretch, is because in the targeted one, if you look at the level of borrowing, that goes up, so the interest actually paid. So the net interest income reduces because we're borrowing a bit more than that, so that we can talk. So that's why. So the additional income coming is offset by the high level interest that we're taking. That's why. That's the key reason. There could be others, but that's the key reason. On the borrowings, that the source of the borrowings will be a combination. So we will always try and search for the cheapest. Because IDC does not take deposits, and we don't even want to even do that. We don't have the luxury of, if you look at financial institutions, traditional ones, you put in your money, they give you 5%, you go and borrow, they ask you 8%, 9%. So that gap we don't have. So there's always pressure on us to go and try and find cheaper money. So whichever at an appropriate time will be the appropriate one, we will do that. So if bonds are cheaper, we will do those. If we go and we do bilaterals, we call them bilaterals with other DFIs, we do that. It's unlikely that the bilaterals, in fact, it's not going to be possible, that we can only rely on bilaterals, because I mean, these are high amounts now, what we're doing. So that, which is why we've gone in and we've issued a bond. We started last year so that the market gets a sense of who IDC is and what the paper. So there will be indeed a combination, but in terms of the proportions, the cost of financing and the length as well, because some of these investments will be long-term in their nature. So we want to make sure that you try and borrow long so that you can lend long as well, so that you mismatch. Because sometimes if you go into the market and you say, okay, I want a 5-year loan, but you go to somebody comes, they want a hotel, you give them a 7-year money, so you've got that 2-year leg. So we try and minimize that. You can't do it 100%, but you try and minimize that. So that's it. And then on the net income, indeed, I think your observation is right. The net income before tax minus tax, that net income after tax minus dividends, then that's whatever's left, then that's the amount that we would invest. But because we've kept the dividends very modest, that's why it doesn't really impact that much. Okay. Now, you asked a difficult question on after lunch, the cost. So what we do is, so we go into, in fact, let me step back. So So what we did last year, so we went to the Johannesburg Securities Exchange, or it's now called JSE again, and then we said we register a bond. So like what the Eskom would do. So we say we register a bond, so then we go to different financial players, and then we issue the bond, and so then we borrow. So they, last year we borrowed 2 billion rand. So we borrowed 2 billion rand. And then the interest rate there, because it's a bond, it will depend. Sometimes it's JIBOR linked. If it's, so it depends who you borrow. If you borrow on the bond, you've got a coupon for the bond, which, because it's listed in the market, it's easily regulated. We've always used the government, I think R5 is the government bond rate, long-term bond rate, as an indication. And then, but because we are not strictly speaking government, so the market will say, okay, fine, we will buy your bond, but we will add a little bit of a premium. But you, what you'll find is, if you look at IGC, if you look at Transnet, for example, if you look at Eskom, the government would say those who buy the bond will try and rate it differently. So they'll say, okay, IDC, we like you, we think your risk is a bit lower. Okay, fine. If you say you want a government rate plus a little bit of a margin, we will do that. Whereas maybe, for example, for another entity, they might increase it. So that for us becomes now a key input in terms of when we're going to lend to somebody else who comes. Because remember now, what will happen is, when an entrepreneur comes and says, IDC, please borrow me 100 million rands, we need to remember that those that bought our bond need also to be repaid their 100. Plus, they charged us the interest. So at least, if all else fails, we must be able to repay them and their interest. We still have not included David's salary for that, and then for the electricity and all of that. So when we calculate then how much we're going to charge as an interest rate, so we start with that cost that we have to pay those that bought our bond, as an example. And then we'll try and include a portion of our cost of doing business, okay? And which will include salaries and everything else. And then what we also do is we say, this business is in this sector. The risk there is a little bit higher than if it's in another sector. So we try and put in a risk premium just in case companies default or they're not able to pay. So that's also something that we add into that. But because we're a development finance institution, we don't say we want to make as much profit as possible. We would look at, is this business that we're funding or that has come for financing going to create jobs? Where is that going to be? We have what David and all of them did was we developed what we call a developmental basket. So we look at those developmental outcomes, which is jobs, where it is, whether it's a startup, whether it's empowered, and all of those. And then we would give almost like a discount, the same cost like a discount for us to come to the price. Which is why then it's not an easy question for me to say what is the price. For example, if we issue a bond and it's an equivalent of prime, I can't say broadly our IDC price will be prime plus two, because it will depend on the number of other things. In some instances, I think there's one slide which David, in some instances we have deliberately said we are not going to make money on this, we will just cover the cost that we've had. Because we want to create more employment. So there are those ones which we have to do. So it's a bit of a complex calculation that we do, but having said all of that, we are aware that there's always pressure for us to keep the cost of funding low. Because if you remember, I said earlier on, one of the key challenges, those that start a business, is that when they come in at a stage, they want to have access to cheaper funding, so that it gives them a better chance. So there's always that pressure. So the answer is not easy, but we take into account the cost of doing business, the cost of funding, and then we give benefit for the developmental outcomes, and then we come to the pricing.
And
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm not very sure yet, but I'd just like Mr. Trina to educate me. I know that CIFA is now a separate entity from the IDC. They have their own budget and so on. But there is a special relationship between the IDC and CIFA, which will be there for some time, despite the fact that CIFA is a separate entity. I would like to know, on particularly around the assets, but possibly also around generally the budget itself. Is this somehow related to CIFA? Is there a little bit of CIFA here, especially around assets and so on, or is this just IDC, that is all, nothing about CIFA at all, completely? Thank you. Thanks, Chair. Sorry, I actually, dividends reminded me. I didn't answer the dividend question. May I ask the dividend question? What is this 50 million dividend? The dividend is the money at the end of the financial year, once the results have been approved, that we pay over to government. So because we report to the Minister of Economic Development, it will go via them, but it ends up in Treasury. So that's what we do. So that's the dividend. So it comes from the profits that we make. So if, for example, if we look at 2016, we're estimating that our profits will be 2.57 billion. Then we will pay tax of about 355, so whatever is left, then we will pay 50 million to government as a dividend. Then these are only IDC numbers. So we have made available a facility of about 983 million to CIFA as a shareholders loans. Okay. Although they've not drawn it yet now, but so that, because I think one of the, if the committee would remember, one of the problems Kula had, people were always worried whether Kula will have money or not. So as part of it being a subsidiary of the IDC, as a commitment, we said we'll make a loan of 983 million. So we have made it, but these numbers that we have here, it's only IDC.
Are you okay? And that is Jenny and Emma. Okay. Thank you. Any benefit from the breast bank or yes, we just want to find out those things.
The short answer is no, because although the bank has been talked about, there's no funds that have transferred to it. The benefit would be for us to co-invest with it when it's there, because remember now you'd be having the ability to get the capital which has been mobilized from the other country. So we would like to believe, we not clarified, I mean, if there's an opportunity for us to get lines from them or some money from them, loans from them, even the cost of that funding naturally should be a bit lower, so that would indeed should be able to benefit. So I think it's for us as South Africans, when we engage with them, that we can try and benefit. But I think for me, it can only just enhance the position that we have. Thanks.
I thought there was an initial.
That would have been the capital that we should be contributed in. That would be capital that should be contributed by nations, but I'm not sure whether that has actually indeed happened. We can check, because DBSA is actually a driver for South Africa, but we can check.
Members, I think if you don't have further questions, remember this is a focus number. These are not yet physical or what number. We will be able to get more information as we interact with the media first report. So that's when we'll be talking guns and things. But are we happy that the way they are going about? That is clear.
Thank you very much, Chair. Well, Chair, sometimes we say we need to give credit where it is due. Well, this is part of the work. It's not everything. We'll be engaging them every quarter and so on to check how it goes. But the fact of the matter, Chairperson, is that every time you engage the IDC team, you get a feeling that they try to go the extra mile. And I think that must be appreciated, because what they're doing, the work that they do, relates directly with the objective of government, that of dealing with the issue of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. And their presentation all the time, a lot of humility, but at the same time they craft their documents in such a way that an ordinary person can be able to understand what they're doing. So we appreciate that. We hope that they will do more. They will not become complacent because they carry a lot on their shoulders. So we just want them to understand that. We appreciate that they're working very hard in the execution of their objectives. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Dr. Glenn. I think they are here, they're listening to themselves, and this is what we've been always trying to send to them. And I think they are really doing what I like about them also, to add on what Dr. Glenn is saying, that the language you speak is the layman's language. You don't come with big terms and all that to make it very difficult for us to understand. So that's one. If you want to, hide information from people, not just members, from people, talk those languages and pretend as though you're in your boardrooms where you are alone, specialists dealing with your issues. But if you want people to understand and also to contribute to the work you're doing, talk in their normal language and be as plain as possible so that people can understand and engage you and be able to also input into the work that you're doing. And in that way, you'd have educated the nation, and this is what you're doing. The only constraint that you don't do the same in terms of your achievements, going down, explaining to people in a very, vociferous manner, if you understand what I'm trying to say. Yes. So that's what I'm trying to say, go down there, like you're hungry, very hungry people wanting to feed. Or people are hungry for your information, feed them and make sure that at the end of the day they know about you, they know what you've done. Because people you are financing, they come out and pretend as though, they fell from heaven. Government didn't do anything to help them. Whereas we know that this is the work of government, that has made them who they are today. But they will come out and pretend as though they were genius enough, better than any other person, and they've achieved what they have achieved out of, their own intelligence. So what's important is to expose, deal with those, so that people know that A and B successful because of IGC, because of government. In that way, many people will begin to appreciate the work that you're doing, and when you give them those big forms, they'll be able to come back to you and say, yes, this is, I want to be like 1, 2, 3, A and B, because through this, they were able to be where they are. And that's what we just want you to do. Otherwise, people will continue to say, this government is not doing anything, whereas we are doing it a lot as this government. Otherwise, thank you very much. I think now, Peter Paul, you will be able to write your report. I know that you will be able to write the report. Really, thank you very much, and all the best for this term. I know it's going to be even harder for you, but we have you at your back. Remember, we always, our phones are always on, not necessarily the chair's phone. You have members also that you can interact. They come from various constituencies. If you're not sure of something, call them, clarify something. If you want to engage their communities or constituencies, call them, go there, talk to people out there, give them information. We do so from time to time. I know the CEO's office is also open at all times, and whenever a request is there to assist. So please, let's do so, because that's the only way we can inform our people and to make South Africa grow. Thank you very much. And members.